Welcome to a Life in Equinox podcast.
And thus comes as close as I'm ever going to come to singing on a podcast. Because my family has a tradition. If you can sing, you're not a part of this family. Well, either way, welcome ladies and gentlemen to Life in Equinox podcast number 13. I know it's been a while since I've done one. I do apologize. Been busy with schoolwork and vacation. But I'm back, and I know you're all excited. Hey, I don't hear any cheering out there. What's going on, guys? Come on, give me a little cheering. Little bit, come on. Oh, I should start introducing this Lammy-nominated podcast. Why? I don't know. There are plenty of other good podcasts, but I'm guessing it's one of those, well, I know Univarn does a podcast. Let me just nominate him and see what happens. He'll never really get nominated. Ha ha ha. My diabolical plan is working. Would it be kind of cool if I had a diabolical plan for my blog? Just some grand scheme behind it all? And then, like, the last blog post, I write some one line, and everyone's like, oh my god, it all makes sense! Why? But I don't really have a plan. Which is a shame. I just kind of write about pandas and chickens and other animals. I do write about animals a lot. I'm sorry about that. There might be something hidden there, but I'm never going to admit to it. Bah! Shut up! Alright, this is just going to get weird. Let's change subjects. This is a movie podcast. Why not let's talk about movies? Now that I'm home, out of school, all graduated, fancy suit and tie. Okay, I don't have a suit and tie, but you don't need to know that. I've actually been spending the last few weeks at home looking for a job, but when I'm not doing that, one thing I do enjoy as a movie buff is I watch a lot of movies that people just don't watch a lot, you know? And my mom and my sister enjoy those kind of movies, which is a rare thing. And so over the last few weeks, I've had the opportunity to kind of show them some movies that they wouldn't see otherwise. Movies like, you know, Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain, Kenneth Branagh's Henry V, and of course, being an anime fan, showing them movies like Princess Mononoke. Now, I don't expect them to like all these movies, because they're not as mainstream as other movies, even though Henry V, I think, is rather, you know, it's Shakespeare. I mean, come on. But it's nice because they do enjoy these movies, and I always enjoy, as much as I understand that everyone's entitled to their own opinion, I don't think there's much, I don't know, a much better feeling as a movie buff to recommend a movie and then have them like it, especially if it's a movie that they may not like otherwise. Because there is always that, oh, this movie's just too artsy, it's too this or too that. And it's nice when it works out and the movie has a solid crossover appeal. And if you're hearing a loud squeaking sound in the background, I do apologize. I am getting off the squeaky chair and moving to the non-squeaky chair. And sliding the desk, and we're just going to do all this fun stuff from a different angle. And now, behind the scenes, apparently, this is going to be the special behind-the-scenes edition. Behind me is a wall. It's white. And next to me is a table with a cup of soda. And that ends the little special behind-the-scenes Life in Equinox podcast. Alright, I need to stop rambling. I'm in a rambling mood. He's a rambling man. Yeah, we're not singing again, no. I think I've tortured you guys enough with that. But we've got a handful of movies I want to talk about this week. Kicking it off with a classic. Classic review. Classic for me. Classic for you. Boo-boo-boo-doo-tsh. And that is the 1948 Western Yellow Sky, directed by William A. Wellman, written by Lamar Trotty, starring Gregory Peck, Ann Baxter, and Richard Widmark. And I watched this movie pretty much because of Richard Widmark and Gregory Peck. And Ann Baxter. But I don't know as much about her as I do. Richard Widmark, who's great in Warlock if you've never seen that Western, and Gregory Peck, who is awesome. And I really enjoyed this. It's a Western with a very classic feel. It's a very, you know, it has kind of that sort of that pacing, that design that's, you know, here's a group of bank robbers fleeing the scene, led by you know, the cool nicknamed Stretch, also Gregory Peck. Then you've got Dude, Richard Widmark, and Bull Run, Lengthy, Half Pint, which is played by Harry Morgan. And, you know, they've all got their own cool nicknames, and they're kind of, you know, they're bad, but they're not really that bad, you know, not beating people up and killing them bad. Or are they? And what's kind of cool is that it's based on William Shakespeare's The Tempest. And it's basically about these group of bank robbers who, while fleeing, come upon this ghost town, which is inhabited by May, also known as Mike, which is Anne Baxter, and her grandfather, played by James Burton. And these bank robbers are trying to figure out, why is this good-looking girl here with a grandfather in the middle of nowhere? And they realize that they have gold, and the entire movie is sort of like a battle of the will between the grandfather and Stretch and Dude. You know, do they split the gold? Do they fight each other for the gold? What happens? You know, eventually some Indians come in, and it all sort of builds up. And it what makes, I think, really good is that the directing work is generic, but creative. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. There's, as you can imagine with any classic Western, the final shootout, the epitome of the Western, the final gunslinging shootout. And what the director does this scene, I won't spoil it for you, is incredibly creative in that it's giving you the shootout, but teasing you with it. And it's a really brilliant setup, and I really enjoyed that. That really stood out to me. Because usually you see the Western, and it's just, you know, it's the Sergio Leone, body, 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 body. Musical score, quick eye flinch, hand flinch, boom! And he really takes it a different angle, and it adds an element of mystery and allure to that scene. And I was eating it, you know, I was sitting there with the cake, just like, oh, that was amazing! And it was a good thing, and what I think made it work, though, is that the movie builds its characters throughout. These six bank robbers, you get to know. You get to know about Stretch's past, Dude's past, Bull Run's past, and it builds their sort of mystique and why do they do the things they do, which is helpful because you kind of get to play along with the film. You know, as they're doing you kind of guess, oh, I know what he's going to do, I know what he's going to do. Oh, he didn't do it. Or, oh, he did do it. Oh, no, I can't believe he did that. And it just adds a nice character element to it, and I enjoy it when a Western is willing to do that. And then you have Anne Baxter, who plays Mike, who's just this tough, kick-ass girl. You come mess with me, I'll shoot you, beat you up, show you who's boss attitude. And it was the sort of, because, you know, the Stretch Gregory Peck character, her dynamic, really just, it oozes chemistry. I think the two downsides to the movie, though, would be, one, I didn't buy some of the romance between Stretch and Mike. It felt a little, you know, cinema forced. I looked at you. You looked at me. I love you. Arr. And another thing is, a couple of the secondary bank robbers kind of just do things, and I don't really understand why they do them. Their kind of character hops around a little bit. So it wasn't quite as static as I would have liked. It wasn't quite as well flown in the backwards characters. But if you're looking for a solid Western, and especially if you love Gregory Peck and Richard Widmark, who are both fantastic, they both deliver it to the T, fabulous, I would recommend this one. If you just want to see it for Gregory Peck, I would recommend another Western he did called The Gunfighter. I think it was a few years later on, but like I think 1960s, I want to say 1960. Around that era. But that was also an amazing Western. Gregory Peck didn't do a lot of Westerns, but the few he did were really mint quality and definitely worth checking out if you are a fan of Westerns. If not, maybe they can lure you in, you know? His movies are much more character-driven. They're a lot more, you know, showing you the character as he evolves. And that's nice. It's very refreshing for a Westerns. Which, you know, can sometimes get a little I are macho man, hear me roar, attitude. And I'm not too big on that. I mean, you've read my blog. I'm about as tough as a crying baby seal. Did you awe? No. Ah, I was going for an ah. This close. Though I realize you can't see my hands appropriately pointing at the computer screen. I'd say about half an inch apart, my fingers. Yeah, rambling again. Sorry about that. But speaking about half an inch apart, worst transition ever. All right. To Iron Man 2. I know I reviewed this movie a few weeks back on my blog, but it never got the podcast treatment. And that's important because what I try to do with my podcast is not regurgitate what I write on my blog. My blog is a sort of what I'm feeling at that time about the movie that I'm writing it. I don't just sit there and go, I will make a very educated opinion on this. And then I'll write very something smart on this. And then I'll finish it off with a brilliant one-liner. I don't do that with my blog, and so as I get away from the review, there tends to be just things I think about and go, you know, that's something I should talk about. And the podcast is there meant to really sort of support that. So with Iron Man 2, what I would say about Iron Man 2 is I get a lot of people's complaints about it. As a standalone movie, it's just kind of okay. But I wager this, that if the Avengers and Iron Man 3 are done well, Iron Man 2 may become one of the best of the lot. I'm not saying to be better than Iron Man, but the problem is it's a setup film to unguaranteed films. And that's a tough sell. Because you look at Lord of the Rings, each of the first two movies builds up to the third one, which finalizes. And you just want to have that progression. With Iron Man 2, Iron Man was a standalone movie, which built onto itself and finished itself. Iron Man 2 tries to unfinish the first one, continue building, and then set up for a third one, which is just not very easy to do, and it happens a lot when you don't know if a movie's going to be a success or not in Hollywood. And so you get a lot of that sort of, yeah, we know how we ended it with the first one, so we're just going to kind of keep going with that and see how far we can drag it a little bit. And, you know, try and bring it far enough out that you just sort of say, okay, I'll give it to you. And then you go, haha, now I can open it up. And it does that. And I enjoyed that about Iron Man 2, is that it does build on the original rather well. It does create a world for it, work it very well. And that's to its advantage. I don't think it's perfect, but I laughed a lot. I felt intensity a lot. I was into the action. Thought they were well-designed, creative. Little choppy cutting, but nothing that I was going, oh my god, that cut, can you believe that cut? Horrible. You know, I was into it. I was buying into it, and I was with it, and I wanted it to flow and go. And the more it moved, the more I was absorbed by it. And Jon Favreau did a good job in building the world of Tony Stark. Played, guess who? Robert Downey Jr. And, you know, it did a good job of sneaking in Don Cheadle without making a big deal about it. Because there's really two methods to introducing a new actor for a role. There's one in which movies like to make a lot of subtle hints to it, like, oh, you look different, did you shave? You know, stupid stuff like that throughout the entire movie. And then there are other movies that just sort of ignore it entirely. And Iron Man 2, I think, makes a couple little jabs at it, but it moves on real quickly. And Don Cheadle does a good job, but he's a very different performer from Terrence Howard. And that, I don't know, that kind of didn't sit well, because, you know, I'm remembering the original, because I watched it the night before as a sort of a, you know, a wind up and a go. But it wasn't, I don't know, they're two very different performers. Don Cheadle, I've always thought, is more of a, I don't know, he's kind of got like a jumpy, playful side to his performances, while Terrence Howard always has sort of a smoother, calmer performance attitude. And because of that, I think it doesn't flow as well if you would watch the movies back to back. But it's not horrible. It's not like, you know, all of a sudden he speaks with a Jamaican accent and he's smoking cigars and doing backflips for no reason. You know, there is sort of that build-up there. And as we all know, the movie ends setting up for another movie, which will come out somewhere between the next 2 to 3 years. But Joss Whedon is directing The Avengers, which has me giddy, because I love Joss Whedon. and I do enjoy Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and if you people keep bashing it on your websites, I'm going to start filing complaints. That show was awesome. And you know you watched it late at night going, Sarah Michelle Gellar. You know you did. Stop pretending to be cool. You're a movie blogger. You're not cool. And we love you for it. Now, moving on from Iron Man 2 to Robin Hood, the prequel slash not prequel thing that's kind of a story that builds up to something that was kind of like the original Robin Hood thing. Easy enough? Oh well. But in Dark of the Matinee is a review, bigneomatinee.blogspot.com. There you go, Mad Hatter. I expect comments and thank yous. But he made the point that the movie should really be titled something like Robin Hood the Prequel or Robin Hood Beginning. You know, it's the early tale. It sets up how they envisioned the story would have developed into the original Robin Hood myth, for the most part. You know, there's a little this and that that they change just to get some of the characters in that don't appear until later in the original Robin Hood. But I enjoyed the movie for the most part. I mean, I think the real issue I had with the movie, and I got into a little, not discussion, I want to say debate or discussion. He posted a comment and I responded with Common Sense Movie Reviews over what my big complaint is that it doesn't inspire. And he said that the Robin Hood movies isn't about inspiring, and I think the Robin Hood movies are all about inspiring. You know, he's fighting against a tyrant, he's, you know, standing up for the people, standing up for the poor, telling them to rise up and fight for themselves, and, you know, gain equality. That's the Robin Hood myth, and that's what you have to inspire in a Robin Hood movie. You have to set up that inspirational motif, and that's what this movie wants to do. It wants to set up why does he think that way. And it kinda does it. A little bit. And it touches on it. A little bit. Just a little bit. Not a lot. And it just kind of sneaks it in there towards the end. And there's just so much that's going on. They've got to set up King John. They want to set up Godfrey as this villain, which he's only kind of sort of a villain. And then you have, you know, the little John character, and you have King John, and Wonder John, and Super John, and Bat John, and Queen John. It's very confusing. There's a lot of Johns in the movie. Well, there's two, but I've added about 12. Which I would think would make it better. But, it's a good movie. It's not great. And I think a lot of the fact that it's not great is that it's a lot of good moments put together. It never molds and meshes into one solid entity. You know, a lot of great movies arise and they claim their own greatness. They say, look at this scene. That's greatness. And it doesn't. It tries to do it, I think, towards the end with the big battle scene, and you have the sweeping over-the-top shot of the army marching and all that stuff, but it's really just kind of a underwhelming scene. I think there was like 13 horses. I don't know. I mean, it what killed me is, you know, they have this 200 French are invading. Bring on about 15 horses. Get the six guys with the beer. Oh, yeah, bring the friar too. Who cares? We're just making it up as we go along. Hey, you got a sword? Come on. You'd think that they would have more people. But that's just me. It is an army and a king. I think he can get more than two. But one thing that I noticed during the scene, and it's become sort of the Braveheart moment in cinema, in which the main character, or a main character, it doesn't have to be the main character, stands up and addresses everybody and gives the rousing hoorah speech. That they can take our lives, but they can never take our freedom moment. That develops it and just makes everyone stand in their chair and go, kick ass! Yeah! And I think it's getting worse and worse as movies go along. I mean, did you watch the speech in Avatar last year? I mean, come on. He sits there and goes, they will take our land, but we will show them that they can't. Followed by a wag of the finger, an girlfriend, and four snaps, appropriately spaced and timed. Booyah! It's getting weak, and in this one it's sort of just a, you know, let's not do stupid things, beat them up, we equal, I got candy. Okay, it's not that bad. It's actually not a bad speech. And it's really just sort of the, this is Robin Hood speech, you know, this is what he stands for speech. But in the movie, it felt very weak to me. And a lot of the scenes surrounding it just kind of felt that way. It felt like I wanted more. I didn't expect more, but I wanted it. I wanted it to make me care about the characters. And I didn't. I mean, they could have killed off Marion in the end of the movie, and I wouldn't have cared. Spoiler alert, sorry. Well, it's not really a spoiler. Kinda, sort of. Eh, whatever. But and I would have been like, oh no, I can't believe they did that. That's surprising. But that would have been my reaction. It would have been, oh my god, I can't believe it. Oh, what? Well, how could they... How? It was that. I would not have felt that way. And that's what bothers me. It's that sort of feeling that they could have done something horrible to a main, central, important character in the mythos, and I wouldn't have really cared much. And you, if you want to make me love and truly engross me in a movie, I have to feel like I care. I have to feel like I really, really, really would feel something if something happened to them. That's what makes these scenes intense, you know, so intense. That feeling that as if this character fell right now, it would hurt. And that's what makes it a great movie. That's what makes it excellent. Robin Hood is a good movie because you care about the characters and where they're going plot-wise, but you don't care emotion-wise. And that's just good. That gets you good. That doesn't get you great. If you can't do both of those, then you get crap. But it does. It gets you to care about the plot and how the characters will go with the plot. But it doesn't get you to care with the emotion. And the emotion is the selling point. That's the kicker. If you don't care on an emotional level whether they live or die, you only care for the plot purposes. And that's a weak sell. And I'm not going to go into too much more on that. I think that sort of just explains my feelings towards it. It's good, not great. But it doesn't have to be great. Good is acceptable. We enjoy good. I enjoy good. Good is worth the price of admission. But greatness is worth the price of admission multiple times. And for a $200 million movie, it would be nice to watch it a couple... they probably actually need people to watch it a couple times, since it hasn't been doing too well. But overall, I think... I know I only talked about three movies, and I spent a lot of time talking about them. I'm going to keep this podcast rather short. I have a lot of other things I have to do, like find a job. Shh, don't tell anybody. Or tell everybody. If you got a job for me, I mean, give me a call. Or send me an email. Or write a telegram. I'd appreciate a telegram. In fact, that would be awesome if I got one. Alas, no telegram come for Ryan. Et tu, Brute? Et tu? Okay, that's horrible. I'm just delusional, apparently, at the moment. Welcome to A Life in Equinox on Heroin Podcast. Yeah. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to leave you to go check out some movies. Let me know, right up on your blog, what you think of them, and I'll go watch them if you give them overwhelming hoorah, cheers, and yays. And I might even go to one you give a little eh-eh, if I'm interested enough. But... if you like what you see on Life in Equinox Podcast, leave me a comment at univarn.blogspot.com. That's univarn, univarn.blogspot.com. If you don't like what you say, also comment there. I want to know what I'm doing right and doing wrong. You can help make this podcast better and more entertaining for you. Or I could just keep talking to myself. And I'm fine with that. Because that's what schizophrenics are. Bye, everybody.